Good evening and welcome to this special Friday edition of the KRFP Evening Report. On today's show, we'll have some on-the-scene coverage of last week's Nez Perce Megalode blockades on U.S. Highway 12. But first, this news. The Idaho Department of Labor said the official unemployment rate for the state went up 0.2 of a percentage point in July to 6.6%. The department said July was the third consecutive month with an unemployment increase. The state's unemployment rate was 6.1% in April. The department said in a report issued today, there were more than 50,000 workers in Idaho without jobs in July, the first time that figure was over 50,000 since November. The national unemployment rate moved in the opposite direction between June and July, decreasing by 0.2 of a percentage point to 7.4%. The Department of Labor said 11,000 unemployed Idaho workers received $13.3 million in unemployment benefits in July, which is down 41% from July of last year. Firefighters are concerned about the 85-square-mile Beaver Creek fire burning west of Ketchum, Sun Valley, and Haley. Fire officials say the area is experiencing high gusty winds and low humidity, and the vegetation has very little moisture. A DC-10 tanker has been dropping up to 12,000 gallons of fire retardant at a time. An area northwest of Haley was ordered evacuated this morning. A report on InsiWeb says overall, the fire is 9% contained, but the southern portion of the fire is contained and relatively stable. Crews are constructing a fire line on the eastern edge to protect structures. 628 people are working on the fire. Governor C.L. Butch Otter and U.S. Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell were scheduled to visit the fire as part of their tour of Idaho wildfires today. Firefighters are making good progress towards bringing the Elk Complex fire under control. The fire grew from 117,000 acres to over 125,000 acres overnight. The fire started the night of August 8th. According to Fire Information Officer Kathy Arnoldus, the fire is now 40% contained, with three hotshot crews working to establish a fire line on the northwest section of the blaze. Other areas of the fire have crews working hard to contain. Arnoldus said, "We've added some containment up around the southeast corner of the fire and a little bit in the southwest to west area of the fire. Overall, things are looking good. We're making good progress." As of this morning, a total of 81 structures were burned, with 38 of those being homes, which were lost in the first 48 hours of the fire due to fast-moving flames driven by high winds. All of the houses lost were in the Fall Creek area. According to Arnoldus, there has been no further loss of residences since then. Arnoldus said parts of the fire have moved towards an area that has already been burned. Arnoldus added the wind could pick up again in the hot, dry area, causing flames to reestablish themselves and complicate crews' efforts. Arnoldus said the Elk Complex fire is the top priority fire in the country due to its size and because there are houses nearby. According to InsiWeb, the Fire Incident Information System, the evacuation order now in place covers the Featherville to Pine corridor. The small settlement of Prairie continues to be an area of concern on the west side of the fire. The southern perimeter of the fire, running along the South Fork of the Boise River from Smith Creek to the end of the Anderson Ranch Reservoir near Pine, has been contained. Stage 1 fire restrictions continue to remain in effect, including no campfires outside of designated recreation areas until further notice. Idaho's second largest fire, the Pony Complex, is now 80% contained, and crews are in mop-up stage on all the flanks of the fire, except for the area near Black's Creek Road in the northwestern section of the fire. Fire suppression repair work will continue on all areas of the fire perimeter as the incident begins to wind down in the coming days. Fire line repair helps reduce the chance of erosion in the months after a fire, before new vegetation has a chance to begin to grow. Today's plan was to make sure the fire does not restart along the edge of Black's Creek Road or does not cross containment lines. A controversial Snake and Clearwater River dredging project will not take place at Lewiston and Clarkston this winter after the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers staff said they need more time to complete an environmental review. The Corps had hoped to begin taking bids for a contract to dredge during this year's fish window, which is the time between December 15th and February 28th, when dredging is believed to do the least harm to protected salmon and steelhead runs. Agency spokesperson Bruce Henriksen told the Lewiston Tribune the date for completing the final draft of the environmental impact review remains unclear. The dredging is part of a 20-year plan to improve the shipping corridor in the river. It calls for the removal of a combined 13,000 cubic yards of sediment from the ports of Lewiston and Clarkston and the removal of 407,000 cubic yards of sediment from the shipping channel. Although the dredging is seen as a single project, port officials must apply for separate permits for the work to be done at the ports. Opponents to the dredging object to the cost of subsidizing barge shipping and the overall negative effects of a transportation corridor that includes four Lower Snake River dams on the recovery of endangered salmon. Port of Clarkston manager Wanda Kiefer expressed dismay at the decision, which would hamper the port's plans to increase the number of visits of the Snake River cruise ship American Empress to the port. A large series of massive rock and mudslides on the scenic North Cascades Highway has tourists-dependent towns along the road reeling from a lack of sales, according to Kelsey Bourne, manager of the popular Duck Brand restaurant in Winthrop. Sales have been slow all week. Winthrop Inn office manager Sonia Perro said she had 35 cancellations in 3 days. She said with only 30 rooms, the cancellations hurt her facility. In a press release, the Washington State Department of Transportation said it is working to reopen the highway as early as Sunday, but a more realistic assessment is for the opening to be Monday or Tuesday. The slides were started by a series of thunderstorms which moved through the area last Saturday night. A Seattle meteorologist said rainfall was around 4 to 6 inches. According to the Department of Transportation spokesperson Jeff Adamson, the storm was harsh with winds at 60 miles per hour or more. Adamson added boulders larger than cars came crashing down on the largest of the 8 slides in the affected section of the highway northwest of Rainy Pass. At the site of the slides, crews are using heavy equipment to remove an estimated 30,000 cubic yards of rock, broken trees, and mud on a 7-mile section of the highway. According to Bourne, the slides couldn't have come at a worse time. Peak sales for the season are in August and September, Bourne said. Already the town feels like it's been turned to winter. Almost 2,000 vehicles pass through the North Cascades Highway every day during the summer tourist season to see the spectacular vistas in North Cascades National Park. A slow-moving cold front moving into the area could bring more thunderstorms and rain. The front could stall, creating the potential for more mudslides. A Sixth Amendment expert told an interim legislative committee yesterday a lack of training, low pay, and inadequate guidelines are all preventing Idaho public defenders from doing the work required to safeguard defendants' Sixth Amendment rights to a speedy trial and access to counsel. The interim committee is tasked with recommending how to bring the state's public defender system into compliance with the U.S. Constitution. David Carroll of the Boston-based Sixth Amendment Center told the Public Defense Interim Committee at their first meeting in Boise yesterday, "Idaho's current system is so far out of compliance it is vulnerable to lawsuits that would force the state to make major changes." Idaho Supreme Court Chief Justice Roger Burdick told the Associated Press reform will take tremendous political courage. The legislative committee was set up at the behest of the Idaho Criminal Justice Commission, who studied the issue after a 2010 National Legal Aid and Defender Association report showed Idaho was not satisfying its constitutional responsibilities to indigent defendants. Most Idaho counties contract with private attorneys for public defender work and usually pay a flat fee for each case without guidelines on what an attorney's caseload can be. That system is a disincentive for attorneys to spend adequate time on cases. Spending additional money for investigations or expert witnesses requires attorneys to request more funds from the court, funds which are often not granted. Sometimes defenders meet their clients for the first time just prior to a court appearance. With a system that saves money by encouraging attorneys to pressure clients to plead guilty, taxpayers pick up a much larger tab when those defendants go to prison. Daniel Chadwick of the Idaho Association of Counties cautioned the committee that counties would be strapped to find cash to provide more public defender services than they do. John Gross of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers told the committee the state had to be prepared to spend more money on the issue. University of Idaho Interim President Don Burnett outlined proposed regulations intended to curb student alcohol abuse at a meeting of the Idaho State Board of Education yesterday. The revised rules come in the wake of a string of alcohol-related student injuries and deaths and widespread belief that student drinking culture is dangerous, contrary to the goals of a college education, and presently out of control. Among the new rules, students who fail to achieve a 1.0 grade point average will no longer be eligible for a semester of probation but will be dismissed from school. The university will establish written expectations of Greek organizations regarding alcohol safety, including requiring permits to serve alcohol at their events. Burnett threatened withdrawing university recognition to Greek organizations that do not comply. All students will be required to take a course that covers alcohol abuse, healthy relationships, and dealing with relationships with alcohol abusers. Burnett wants to create two staff positions in the Dean of Students office dedicated to alcohol issues on campus. He is also considering what the university's options are for parental notification regarding students' repeated alcohol-related violations and whether the students' handbooks code of conduct can be applied to off-campus behavior. In addition to hearing about plans to curb alcohol abuse on the University of Idaho campus, the State Board of Education yesterday voted 6-2 to authorize the university to spend $75,000 on the next phase of a plan and design for the construction of a new residence for the UI president. The board also authorized a new employee classification system that will give $180,000 worth of raises to employees whose current salaries fall below the minimum pay rates in the system. The board approved a UI Athletic Department 5-year contract with Nike for $140,000 worth of apparel and products each year. The board also decided to send proposed minimum requirements for K-12 physical education to the public for comment. Meanwhile, in Pullman, Washington State University binge drinkers kicked off a year of partying Wednesday night that brought police to investigate two falls and a robbery where the victim was too intoxicated to explain what happened. Pullman Police Commander Chris Tennant told the Lewiston Tribune he was already frustrated and worried about the semester to come. Tennant said, "It's not even the first day of classes, not even the first weekend yet. This was a Wednesday night. The university, the city, and the landlords all want to help solve this issue, but obviously no matter how much effort we make, it's not enough." We now turn to our featured segment. On today's show, we have some of the audio from Radio Free Moscow's coverage of the Nez Perce tribe's blockade of the tar sands megalode on August 5th and 6th. More than 100 Nez Perce tribal members and others blocked the 644,000-pound load as it headed east to cross onto the Nez Perce reservation at the Clearwater River Casino 4 miles east of Lewiston the night of August 5th. The blockade lasted from midnight to just after 2 in the morning. The two-lane-wide, 225-foot-long wastewater evaporator was manufactured by Emmett Industries near Vancouver, British Columbia, for General Electric. Hauler Omega Morgan, based near Portland, is responsible for moving the load. The Athabasca Corporation will take ownership of the load when it arrives at their Hanging Stone facility in the tar sands of northeastern Alberta. The 23-foot-high vessel, along with a nearly identical one, was barged up the Columbia River to the port of Wilma near Clarkston on the Snake River. The second load is still at the port of Wilma, and Omega Morgan may try to move it up U.S. Highway 12 before a scheduled August 27th court date in which Idaho Rivers United and the Nez Perce Tribe are seeking an injunction to stop the heavy hauls through the Forest Service's Wild and Scenic River Corridor along the Locksaw and Middle Fork Clearwater Rivers and through the Nez Perce Reservation. Federal Judge B. Lynn Windmill ruled in February the Forest Service has authority over oversized loads in the Wild and Scenic River Corridor, as well as the authority to consult with the Nez Perce Tribe over intrinsic values of the corridor. However, the Forest Service did not enforce that authority, even though Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest Supervisor Rick Brazell said the agency would not approve the transport without a study and consultation with the tribe first. The Omega Morgan megalode passed into Montana at Lolo Pass last Friday and is well on its way to the Alberta tar sands. Although these jurisdictional issues were a main motivation of those who blocked the megalode, others are opposed because of the impact the Alberta tar sands development will have on the planet's climate and the environment of the Aboriginal territory in northeastern Alberta. The following is an edit of a recording made by KRFP citizen journalist Paulie D. the first night of the blockade last week.
We tried every conceivable way of diplomacy, trying to get an initiative on the table where at least we could discuss the impacts that were made. They turned it down. General Electric decided that corporate America is more responsible than the federal government. I'm not even considering talking to the tribal governments or the people who live here. That on Sunday we made the decision then that we were going to go ahead and use the last resort that we had, where we felt they broke the law. We uphold the law. We uphold the very things that make this an intrinsic value for all of us. We share as people. This is our Nemipo way in our hearts. We try to show an example. Whether we as leadership get arrested or not is immaterial. It's the example of commitment that we make, that we maintain, that we demonstrate, that we support, and hence we want your support. We want the support so this continues to go on. This same battle is being fought in the Dakotas, in Oklahoma, Nebraska, and in Canada. But in Canada, they're suffering from these very loads that we're sending through here. We're saying no. It ends. It has to end.
And we are in the streets. Woohoo! Indeed. The first of the pilot trucks had just passed us by. First pilot truck just blasted through the crowd and is the ISP is coming toward. There are literally 100 people in the highway right now. There's literally 100 people in the highway screaming and yelling, and we can see the load approaching us. There's literally 100 people in the road with signs yelling, screaming, chanting. Woo! Yeah! six Idaho State Patrol officers standing right in front of us. They do not seem to be approaching us at this time. They seem to be pretty slowed down. And the load is stopped. The load is stopped. Again, hundreds of people in the road yelling, screaming. What are you doing here tonight?
You know what? Nicholas, Mary Jane, Oatman, and I'm defending my unborn great-grandchildren's land.
Fantastic. Thank you for being here tonight. When it first started, there's about 10 tribal children under the age of 10 who came up and actually held the line. They sat down in front of the tribal elders. 17, looks like about 17 ISP, maybe mingled in with a couple. Yeah, these are ISP. 17 ISP. We have a couple Nez Perce County sheriffs here.
They're gonna arrest our best man. They're arresting everybody.
So there's already been, seems like, two, possibly three arrests. Maybe we could ask some of these officers. So, excuse me, sir. My name's Paul McPolin. I'm with KRFP in Moscow, Idaho. What are you doing here this evening?
I'm working patrol tonight.
You're working patrol.
Mm-hmm.
And see, you're accompanying this megalode here.
No, we're not accompanying the megalodes. They came on their own.
Well, they came on their own.
No.
But ISP has been consistently with the megalodes for the past year.
I can't answer for the past. All I know for right now is we had a report of a large crowd gathering here. That's why we were sent here, because we had a report that people were going to block the highway. That's the only reason why we're here tonight.
I see. Okay. So what do you foresee happening in the next few minutes? Do you think that
my hope is a peaceful resolution. I don't control what the Transportation Department allows or doesn't allow. My job is to make sure that the highway is clear for everybody's use.
Okay.
I don't have the say in that. I don't make the laws. I only enforce them.
Okay. Some ISP or maybe are you tribal police?
Mr. Johnson, remove yourself from the highway.
You think I can do that legally?
This is Nez Perce Secretary.
I'm disobeying a tribal law. I believe that. So go ahead and arrest me.
Okay. You want to hand the flag off to the
veteran? No, this came with me. Okay. Go with me.
Okay.
You're going to have to gather from there.
Sir, are you the head of the tribe?
Sir, he's under arrest right now.
There we go. So the man who I believe is the head of the tribe was brought up with another officer, and supposedly to try and calm the crowd down a little bit, but it didn't really seem to work too well. There are a number of tribal police, Nez Perce tribal police here, who are actually standing between the ISP and the Nez Perce sheriff's deputies, officers. Right now it's the tribal police are actually standing between the ISP and the megalode caravan, as it were. What happened out there?
Okay, well, they were asking me if I was a tribal member. I said no. I said I'm a tribal member of another nation. And he was like, well, then you need to get off this road because you're... And he said, like, he was detaining me, and they surrounded me. You saw him by, like, five or six people ripping my arm behind me, traumatizing my son just out of their ghoulish, Nazi-ish, which is just boggles of... I cannot believe that an officer would do that to a child.
That was heinous.
That was heinous beyond belief. I'd like. Did anybody get any officer names on that?
I would like to
know if somebody got some officer names and badge numbers on that.
I don't see them arresting every one of these people. Right now, it just looks like they're randomly choosing them. Nobody's even saying anything. They're just taking people.
Oh yeah, look at this. Look, and they're kind of they're being kind of sharkish, moving in like predators, and maybe does it seem like they're picking on some of the smaller people, or what's going on here?
That must be a non-native.
Oh, there you go. Yep. Got escorted off. So,
all right. They're arresting the natives for doing it, but they're letting them just walk away.
Yeah, that is interesting, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So, there you have it. The natives who are standing out here are being arrested, while the majority, I guess, maybe all of the white people have been escorted off the street. So it looks like that lane is almost completely cleared up.
It looks like they're using the cars to corral them.
Yep. So ISP is now doing the work that they were meant to do, coming down here and protecting the people from each other. Yep. I spoke with one of the ISP officers a little bit earlier. And so there's the second pilot vehicle.
It's going.
Oh no, there it goes. So the Megaload is going through. If anybody wants to stop it, now's the time to sit down. In plastic. Oh boy. 646,000 pounds. A little push cart behind it. Oh yeah, great. Wonderful. That's what it looks like. Top of the Saturn V rocket. It's just gone by us, and the remaining elements of the caravan are going by. There goes the paramedics are rolling by. 2:46 in the morning, and I'm here with Dave, and we're heading which way? East. We're heading east, and catching up with the Megaload, which is stopped again at, what is this place? It's parked here.
It's parked.
They parked it right before Arrow Bridge.
That was an edit of a recording made by KRFP citizen journalist Polly D the first night of the blockade, Monday, August 5th. We now turn to some of the sounds of the second night of the Tar Sands Megalodes travel over the reservation, recorded by KRFP citizen journalist Eric Martin.
I came down to support our NEPTIC because I knew that they were going to stand up for our rights to stop the Megalodes. And after they were arrested, you know, I just felt like, you know, we can't just stop. We have to continue the fight, even though our leaders were taken to jail. So I stood there, and I was peaceful. I wasn't trying to cause a problem. I did All I ask is that bring somebody to talk to us so that we can talk to them and ask them to turn the megalodes around. And they didn't like what I had to say. They gave me the option of either moving off of the side of the road. They gave me the option of taking a citation or I would be arrested. And I did ask what I would be arrested for, and they said disorderly conduct, and I said, I'm not doing anything disorderly. I said, I'm standing here exercising my right as a tribal member, exercising my right as a sovereign nation is what I think, because we do have that right. This is our reservation.
And so you were arrested last night, and now you've come out again tonight?
I've come out because we can't stop fighting. I mean, I don't think they should even be where they're at right now. I think we should be right there stopping them and telling them, you need to turn around. If we let them get any further, we have to let them go all the way through, because there's no way they're going to be able to turn around once they get on the river.
Last night, it seemed more crazy because, like, I got hurt from one of the cops, and right now we're just waiting, so I don't know if it's going to be crazy or...
Yeah, what happened last night?
Well, we were doing a ceremony, and we got done singing, and the cops were just pushing us away, and one of the cops pushed me and my cousin Jada Oatman, and then one of the cops... pinched me, and then it pushed me, and I kind of tripped, like I fell. So that cop was messed up.
Could we start with your name, please?
Yes, Elliot Moffitt, and that's my Indian name is Atpalatkit.
And I'm interested in why you're here and what this means to you.
Well, we've been following the megalode issue for a number of years now. And we've supported the tribe and the tribal leadership in advocating for the protection of our rights, our treaty rights, and the Indian people have always stood up and spoken for those who haven't had a voice in Congress or in the state legislature or anywhere else. Things like fish and the salmon and things of that nature, the vegetation, no one's speaking up for them, so somebody has to, and so that's what the Indian people often, and that's a role that we can fill.
And were you here last night?
I wasn't able to make it last night, a transportation problem, but my daughter was here, and my son, who's on tribal council, was here. He got arrested.
And do you have any, I don't know if it's reports from him or stories from him or...
Well, he's been so busy, I think they're really trying to group and see what their from the government, tribal government side, on what their next steps are going to be. And you know, they've tried to negotiate, they've tried to be diplomatic and work with companies, they haven't been fruitful. So this is the next step, is to get out get out on the pavement, beat some pavement here.
And I assume that since the entire executive council is behind this, this has got wide support amongst the next person.
Oh yeah, I hear. You know, I've talked with a lot of tribal members today, and not only leadership, but it's the tribal members that are, you know, sticking themselves in front.
There are a number of law enforcement vehicles. They're telling people to get out of the way. There are maybe eight vehicles parked on the side of the road here. Law enforcement wants the vehicles moved. There's lots of people on the side of the road, on both sides of the road.
Not enough room for the pass. May not park the car there.
Off the pavement.
This is our treaty right. You guys have no
right.
You'll go to jail.
Off the pavement.
We'll take you to jail.
We'll discuss it at the jail if you would like.
Shameful.
Off the paved portion of the highway.
I'm off the road.
Law enforcement officers that are becoming more aggressive with folks who step over the white line on the highway. We have an arrest in the road over here. There are three officers arresting one person. There is finger shaking going on. There's at least two Nez Perce tribal paddy wagons right now that have. Folks are being instructed to step off the pavement, excuse me, which essentially means to step behind a concrete barrier into a bunch of brush or blackberries or, you know, something. So the mass of people are now walking on the road, walking slowly, but down the road. The sirens that you heard earlier was an effort, I assume, to irritate people or intimidate people to get them off of the road. But folks just seem to be happy to continue to walk down the road.
Noon wasih nimipu. We are the people.
That was some of the sounds from Tuesday, August 6th, which was the second night of the Tar Sands Megalode blockade on the Nez Perce Reservation. That was recorded by KRFP citizen journalist Eric Martin. That's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix and the recordings of local events, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the Radio Free Moscow website, RadioFreeMoscow.com or KRFP.org to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow. Nancy Casey and Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a great weekend.